Break out the scope, get ready to snag. Shopping them hooks cause she's hitting the bag. Dick Stemke is scoping to town. He's got the shingles, they're making him itch. We can't tell if he's naughty or not.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. A hose, hose, hose.
Jay Steven.
Hose, Mary, hose. Mary, ho, ho.
Hose. Hose and hose. Anyway, how is the winter weather? You're gearing up for Christmas there. You've stuffed your own stocking with care. What's it looking like?
Couple more days. Yeah, it's nice. You know, it's not ideal for snowmobiling. Not too good for that. There's not much snow left, but ice fishing's decent. People are getting out doing that, and you know, travel should be good this week.
Very
no big
nice.
Storms, so yeah, I like that. I got a lot of driving to do, so myself. There How about you? You?
Oh, same as everybody. Got to go disappoint the family with my presence. So
okay,
just chill up there. And watch the eyes roll. You know. What are you doing? You pull up in the rig there and get in, get out. Now I've got a busy week. Just living on the water. I talked to you yesterday. It's been fluctuation city. Went from teens to like 59, 60 back down. It's been the roller coaster. Started off though. I did send you a pretty hoggy girl. Pretty.
Yes, you did.
Oh yeah, that was. But. It's been good, you know, just staying dialed in on it. But you hit those hard fluctuations like that, and that's kind of the thing you're going to deal with in the South this time of year is big swings. I mean, just big swings where, you know, fish are going to stage differently than they have been. You know, cold water temps, it's coming. It's already there on certain bodies of water. So that's what you just got to prepare for. And, you know, just staying ahead of the curve and reading it day to day. But couple grinder days in there, I'm not gonna lie. It's like, whoa, you know, the typical feastern of essentially where we're at right now is that late fall, that cold water. Where I was at yesterday was a whopping 41 water temp, right, which is unusually cold for where I was at, but nonetheless, I mean, that's cold. We're getting down there. So big baits, you know, obviously your big swim baits. Magnus has been just holding its own all.
I don't. You want, said, you know, yeah, that's very cool.
I don't even. It's almost like late fall for now. January and February for me are like a different animal, but this is kind of like that period you guys hit. You know, nobody's out there. It's kind of that weird transitional, and we're starting to take that swing at that, but. Yeah, freaking! I'm glad I made the Magnus. Let me put it that way. It's a lot better than freaking. I would get so sick of rigging baits. You know, half of this. Somebody asked me this week, Jay. They're like, you know, what do you do? What do you do this? Why did you do that? Blah 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 blah. All that stuff. And to be honest with you, there's fundamentally just can I make this easier on myself too? Because I was thinking back before those came out of the amount of swim baits. Like every day, I'm getting home. Screwing with them, you know, like, oh gosh, I gotta fix this, or you know, somebody snagged one in the top of a tree, well now I gotta redo this and redo that. So yeah, the deep weight is just devastating in that thing. Hopefully, I was talking to Eric over at Livingston today, should be a 2 ounce weight here shortly. I think it's in that roll that'll be able to fit all of the Livingston size insert weight. So I want to
Titans and whatnot.
If you want, I mean, I have guys that like their Titans. If you remember, we had the initial thing there when this first came out years back, where there's some that old Chinaman broke the mold there, and I'm sure he was executed, but nonetheless, they're not people. What does it matter? It's everything you do is based on third world slavery, but, I'm sure he was summarily executed behind the factory, but the ones that were sinking, actually Herbie swore by those. He uses them as like a deep jerk bait, but hopefully that 2 ounce weight, I wouldn't recommend it with the Titan per se, unless you want something just sinking like crazy, but it'll be fun on the Kraken and Magnus, you know, cause a lot of guys mod their Krakens. If you know, on that one. Call Herbie if you don't know. I can't say it. I'll get in trouble. But a little trickery maybe me and Herbie came up with if you want a really deep tight, or excuse me, a really deep crack. And, you know, involves a DeWalt and a drill bit, Jay. And just okay. A lot of just, well, whatever. Screw it. It's the holidays. What he and I have done with those baits is just take a small drill bit and drill on either end. This voids the warranty, obviously. You're not going to get a warranty with this. But taking a small drill bit and drilling out the other cavity and filling them full of shot. And that thing, you want a 9-ounce tube? Here you go. You want a 7-ounce tube? Here you go. Get it in where you fit in. But a lot of that's playing around, so hopefully we'll have that add-on. I don't know. Just kind of thinking. My brain, Jay, is just dialed deep right now. It's that 12 to 20 zone, which is just a whole other world of baits. It's, you know, when you sit here and go, okay, a depth rate or a pounder or whatever, that's not even getting the conversation started. You know, everything's got to be 10 minimally. You know, that 10 to 18, and that's a hard zone to hit. You know, a lot of people are not hitting that zone, and that's
not with floating baits, for sure. Yeah.
You gotta be modding. You gotta be that, or just, I'm just not diligent enough to freaking count down something that long anymore. Used to be able to. I'd throw a freaking sinking depth rater out there and eat a sandwich. Now I just want it over with.
I'm thinking stuff has to be slow too. But didn't you say the other day you got the big one or a good fish?
I got a few big ones
Something. Oh, on a figure eight, it was like, right?
Oh yeah, that thing was coming up though. It's one of those things where it's like murderous intent. If you can get them triggered, there's nothing you can. It's weird, like with cold water where. And everything, it's funny, I'm working on, I'll tell you, and it remind me, the project here, just say project, I don't remember, whatever. Everything's obviously tied together. It's all just a freaking cast, right? But, you know, there's hard lines where you're like, okay, level of light penetration, or the fish won't come up above this. You're seeing that with scope and all that fun stuff where they just won't do this, they just won't do that, until they're ready to just crush it. And that's so fun to watch because that was a deep, slow retrieve. And then you come up into that and you go, oh, now that was on one of the funsies that are coming out here. I'll share that fish with everybody here after a while. But that's on some of the newer stuff that's coming out. But even with like Critter and Menace, I'm waiting stuff like crazy. But that's just the time of year. Actually, I got my box of some Musky Shop stuff I needed there. And, of course, right there smack dab in it is those Savage Gear weights. I love those. I don't know if Danny came up with those, but they're killer. For quick mods, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
The clip-on ones,
those
right?
Those are killer. So that's been doing good. But, you know, that's the time of year, just deep. And, I mean, it's like you might as well just take your whole tackle box, and if it's not hitting 10, forget about it most days. You know, and that's a little bit different. You just kind of, it's weird. I don't know. Probably I'm the only person that's tried to conceptualize it that way. But like, you know, just eliminate that first 10 feet. I'm not fooling with it. If I want to get a 32, maybe.
Sure.
But eliminating that and like spatially trying to just position the boat. Because if you think about, if you chop 10 feet off the surface level of the water column, right? If you chop that 10 feet off vertically from where your boat's at, but if you still cast in the same way, it's not appropriate. So it's like positioning your boat to where your cast should land if 10 feet of water was removed. That makes sense? Like, where's that edge? Where does your retrieve need to start to hit your target depth in that reduction? So I'm like positioning in such a way where I'm ensuring that while my bait sinks, it's getting there quickly and effectively, but I'm just kind of eliminating that top 10 feet out of my brain. Does that make, you see what I'm saying? Like spatially, yeah. Because it's like, it does no good to waste the cast to get further than I need to be. If like, say, if I know that these fish are on like a third break or at the very bottom of a point, you know, it's just a mental game of where I'm positioning And it's more of a, okay, how effective can I be? Because, I mean, when you're fishing slow and deep, a lot of times I feel like what's the burn in the back of my head is, are my casts landing exactly where they need to be the majority of the time? And am I covering things appropriately? But how quickly can I do that? Right. So it's efficiency at all, on all fronts. I think that's what's lost on a lot of people in that colder water temperature fishing. It's like, okay, we need to be orderly. We need to be efficient. We need to be proficient, and we need to be able to cover it as quickly as possible with slow retrieves. So the quick, it's not that we're quickly retrieving, right? It's like, how do I position my boat to make sure I've, you know, subdivided my target zone every which way I can? I feel confident that I've fished that so I can move on to the next without leaving any stone unturned. And so you end up in a scenario where you go, if you're on a long break, that might be 45 minutes or an hour of your time. Now, let's say they're on a major, or say they're on a minor, or say it's happening at sunrise, or say it's happening at sunset. You might have a bite window that's 20 minutes, but we need to make sure we're effectively covering, right? It's the methodology is slower than the bite window. So like the full coverage of an area is often slower than the 20-30 minute bite window, which is like kind of a brain bruiser, you know. So it's something you need to consider. But anyway, soapbox, and I don't know why I got down there at rabbit hole. Jaybird, are you ready? Are you ready to play with your ice hole?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
What do you
get
mean?
Ready. A good friend of the podcast, Paul Halter. He and I trade some texts about it. We're gonna do it, hopefully here shortly. Do a little slap of fresh coat of paint on Muskie Country on the video game there for your phone.
Okay.
But Paul released a new game, which is the Ice Derby Challenge 2. Let me make sure I'm saying that. I let me check. Right? I'm looking here. I'm pushing it into my phone, Jay. We go here.
Look. Okay. Here.
Ice Fishing Derby 2. So the first one is actually a load of fun. Support him on that, guys. Is that free? It's free. Go over there and download it for our old pal Paul. So he has given the world a lot of joy, and he's helped with plenty of app questions. And I mean, on my end. So this guy's a pretty slick programmer. So give him some love if you want to do it. Now, it's pretty cool. I actually played, and it's not like, ooh, you know, there's nothing. He's just giving you a download here. But I actually fooled around with the first one quite a bit, and it was a hoot. So if you need a time killer, there you have it. Jay, you're sitting there, imagine, with your cousin-in-law's brother's sister over the holidays.
You can ice fish in pure comfort. I mean,
exactly. Why do you want to sit there and listen to them over the holidays?
Why would you want to freeze when you can just, I mean, sit on the, you know, lazy boy and go at it for there, perch? Anyway. What do you catch on the ice fishing game? Is it a variety?
It's a variety. Yeah, he's got everything in there.
So cool.
It's pretty fun.
I'm checking it out.
You should do it.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's he's a cool dude, man. And go over there and give him some love. Give him a nice review. Give him the old 5-star.
There you go. Yeah, you for know? Sure.
But he's good people. He sent that over to me. So pass on the love for the holidays. Jay, what do you want for Christmas? Top three in order.
An SM58 Shure microphone.
Okay.
And a digital interface.
Okay.
And that's about it. How about you?
Smitty File and World Peace in that order.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reaching really big.
Yeah, the Smitty File is far more important than World Peace.
Was the Smitty File like a hook sharpener on one end and a shanker on the other?
What's the shanker? I'm waiting on Jake. Oh. I need to just send him like a katana blank so he can put it on a 12-inch Smitty. We can wreak some real havoc with that.
There you go.
No, it's ridiculous. Anyway, let's get to it here. Guys, also, too, we had some contest winners last week. We'll get those out in the mail. They're sitting in the boss's office there. So it's the holidays. We're swamped, but they're a coming, Jay.
Great.
They're getting there. Oh, what do we got here? Go to the inbox. What do we have in the inbox? Somebody sent, what is this? Okay, that's a fish picture. Okay, yeah, nice one. Hold on, folks. I'm moving like frickin' Ice Age here. All righty. Kevin, hi. I heard the raffle winner was Kevin with a Hotmail address, and while I strongly suspect there may be more than one Kevin, still proudly carrying a dial-up era inbox into the modern age, I just wanted to say I am also Kevin, and yes, I do in fact have a Hotmail. I am not claiming stolen glory or anything, just wondering if there's any consolation prize for the rest of us Kevins who refuse to abandon our early internet identities. That's funny as shit. Good on. No, there's no backup prizes, Kevin. We're not handing out trophies here just because. No, that's funny as heck. Jay sent him a sticker. And he's next order from the Muskie Shop. We appreciate it. That's fine. Kevin, I guarantee you, you'll get a free Muskie Shop sticker in your next Muskie Shop order. Now, you don't get to pick the color, but it's going to be in there. Oh, there's two Kevins with Hotmails, Jay. I think, did we kick the hornet's nest with the Hotmail or the Yahoo?
Yeah, could these things happen, though, Steve. You know? They do.
If your email comes through like, you know, rutabaga24 and it says like frontier.net, I might make assumptions about you. And that's my right. Sorry. What? What are the other amazing
internet? Oh, we've got some frontiers.net that we deal with. Y'all, yeah.
Lenny it. Oh, man. I'm making assumptions. And, you know, It's one of those things, Jay. You know, there's a reason. You just, maybe you're an outlier. Maybe you have a frontier.net, an account. And
sometimes there's no other choice.
You know, whatever you're doing there. Let's get after it here. What do we got? Alicia, this year, me and my other half really focused on one body of water. We caught a lot of upper 30s. Pike that were bitten, tore up with large musky bites, and mid to 40, slow 48. Okay, so going through a lot of this stuff where they got some pike that are getting thrashed by muskies. Had really fresh wounds going into August. Traditionally throwing 6 to 8 musky baits. My question is, should we be throwing bigger baits if we came across this consistently? So, seeing pike in the mid to low 40s and... yeah, I mean that's some big thrashing. I have seen pike in the 40-inch class be hit by muskies boat side because of something hyper erratic. You know, it depends on, again, history means nothing on any given body of water. See, this email address is a Gmail, so I can make no assumption. Like if it's not front, I know they're not in Canada, or you know, if you get a frontier.net, Jay, I know where you're at.
Do you?
Pretty much.
Okay.
But Gmail could be anywhere. Could be anywhere.
I think so.
But yeah. Nonetheless, I'm going to be not apprehensive about going super big, right? But when I'm thinking about doing that, I wouldn't hesitate. If you're seeing pike that are just getting tore up, which it happens, I mean, they can become a pretty serious food source for these things, depend on your system. Don't be afraid to go with pounder-sized baits. I mean, if it's a big forage bite, and there's sometimes, Jay, it's like Gavin, we had Glenn on, but sometimes when I'm talking to him on the phone and stuff, he's always harping at me, big, you know, what about this size of a crankbait, or what about this, or what, you know, in certain areas, you always end up erring on the bigger side of things, right? There's certain bodies of water where you need a big bait to stand out, so... Don't be afraid to go with, say, a pounder class lure. It's the Mega Monster Medusa. Is that correct?
Monster Medusa.
Monster.
Yep.
Monster.
It's that's huge. The chaos equivalent. Sure.
Right. It's you huge. Need a, you basically take a 9-foot heavy rod, cut 4 feet off, put a tip on it, and you've got the appropriate rod for that bait.
They use 2 liters of Canadian gas to make each bait, too.
It's just freaking... That's a tough bait to throw. I've thrown them. To be honest with you, when we get into that, and it, again, my back doesn't like this stuff anymore. I can do it, but I'm just being honest with you. So I'm going to give you multiple approaches. So when I have been on like goofy big bait bites, my soup du jour was generally the double tail pounder, right? I've left a lot of those stuck on the bottom. But the double tail pounder and then the monster medusa, I've caught fish on. I've had more missed fish on that bait in particular because of the volume of the bait.
The surface area.
It's so freaking big.
Sure. Yeah.
Where's one? I'm looking here. There's one hanging right there. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Nothing wrong with it. It's just, it's tough to get hook penetration. Where I'm going with this is this. How thick is that? I mean, we're talking 3 inches top to bottom. I mean, what is that? Number 10 trebles that are stock on there? No matter what, when it comes to really large rubber presentations, I've never seen any other bait where hook sharpness mattered more. Right? I feel like if I'm in a sweep, I'm sweeping, say, that big pounder, the double tail pounder, if that fish hits anywhere where I'm bringing the rod back and I just got to pick up the line to get to that fish, I felt at a deficit on hook setting power, right? Because he's already hit the bait. It's just an instant before he lets go. I basically want those hooks so sharp that if it touches him, we're getting hook penetration, right? I'm not saying that those baits ever would set the hook themselves, but I'm saying you want to have that terminal tackle, those hooks, spot on. And I'm talking, if you run it through some stuff, you need to be checking it, and they need to be laser sharp. That's my biggest recommendation when you get to that big class. Now, the other alternative on that end of things, if their fish are really, really dialed in on big, big, big stuff, think trolling. Right? That's a far more enjoyable, easier way to do this, where you can take, you know, a Frankensuick. Was that 14-inch bait, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can now put a 14-inch bait down and jerk troll it. Little bit easier than ripping rubber. You can also troll, and I was actually talking to a client this week about trolling big rubber. And that's not something that's really done that often, but it is effective. You can actually take just a, and we actually think I have a trolling chart I put on Muskie 360 on the trolling charts for, I believe, a pounder. Or maybe it's just Bulldogs, but it's on there. Of just dragging a big rubber bait behind the boat will catch muskies on occasion. Rip trolling it and moving the rod, manipulating it under boat power will catch even more. Right? So that's an alternative. For me, I'm going to go to pulling 13-inch grandmas and 14-inch jakes. And if we're really into that size class, that big of a bait is going to get the look if they're cued in on really, really big stuff. Maybe when you're seeing some of these bites, you're seeing, you know, they're reacting negatively to these fish up in spawning areas. But if you want to look at big stuff, that would be a place to look. Any other really big presentations, Jay, that are like effective if they're dialed in on super big forage that you can think of?
Oversized crankbaits. Yeah. Some of the big slammer stuff too.
Yeah. How about
that? Yeah. That new Spanky, G13, they got a big 13, kind of a solid plastic deal. So it's got a different, totally different sound, resonates completely different than like a big grandma would with that ABS plastic.
Yeah. I decorated a tree with one of those yesterday.
A tree?
Yeah. I hung it in a tree like you were decorating for Christmas, Jay, and I couldn't get it back. You had to say, you said that one.
Lovely.
It was 30 minutes of my life.
Kind of a sore spot then is what you're saying.
No, I was just, you know what? I'm a really high batting percentage on getting baits back. Really high, you know. Rule number one, just to throw this out here. Guess what? If you just reverse, like if you're trolling and we get a bait snagged in something, 90% of the time, put the boat in neutral, back up a little bit, create slack line, she'll float out, right? You look like a freaking magician. Clients are like, woo.
Right? Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? Create a little slack in the line, let her float out, you're good. If that doesn't work, pull the other lines back up and just pull it from the opposite direction. Comes right out, right? once that's over, now we're getting out the freaking hook retrieving tool and all that stuff. And it was, Jay, it was one of those things. I know the tree that I was going over, misjudged it just by a tick, and just wrapped in there like crazy. And you get a bait that big in a tree, there's a hook point or three stuck in something, you know. That's the kind of the nightmare.
Right. But, yeah, it's multiple. Yeah. I've lost maybe one lure in the last 3 years trawling.
You guys
the river.
You guys don't lose crap up there. I mean, it's the one thing about a lot of Canada, you're going to lose stuff just because of rocky nature of it. Wisconsin, it's kind of hard to lose a bait. You know, especially on the lakes. You're doing good on the river. What is, you know, that'd be, is there no submerged timber there? Or you just know where it's at and avoid
it? It was wood. It was wood. Yeah. The same thing. I ticked it. Yep.
Yeah, but that's the thing. A lot of the lakes, man, it is hard to lose one. You know, you get it up on like a rocky spine on something where you could get it out. You just don't want to bang your trolling motor up is often the case. But, man, you know, where I spend all my time down here, I'm a bait losing fiend, but that one burnt me. I was not happy about that one. That was just stupid. You know, I had a stupid moment. You know, you go, it'll be all right. Whack, and it's just in there. You know, I say that, though, as laughing. Happened to Dr. Bobby was passing it on to me. He was on a pretty good bite on a Smitty bait, you know, and he had gotten hooked up or whatnot. And I talked to him, and then we were comparing notes, and he said, well, I lost that bait, though. You know, it's like you get something going on a bait, and then you immediately lose it. It's like nightmare scenario.
Yeah, but worst case scenario.
Other big baits that are true, like I said, actionable, truly workable. That XL Beaver is another one I'd recommend. Right, if you're truly looking for that, because if I'm seeing, again, we're far afield from your question, I apologize, but these people are seeing a lot of pike that are intentionally being struck. Which, guess what? Something to consider here, folks. If you have a bad year class of, say, perch, you have a bad year class of panfish or whatever a sustainable, this quote unquote, the sustainable food source is for muskies, if they take a nosedive, be it walleyes or whatever, they're going to turn their attention elsewhere. And it's happened on fricking some of these overstocked lakes they'll stock up in the Northwoods, you know, where if you remember years back, there was like Squaw Lake, what they call Amber now. They were actually asking people to take, I think it wasn't like take your first fish over 30 out. Remember that? Like there was a mandatory key.
Yeah. There's a couple lakes like that where they were. Yeah. Right. They lowered the limit to like 30 inches and they felt it was,
they were encouraging you to take a muskie out
too high a density.
Well, because they eradicate. But the problem is this, too high of a density, you eradicate food source and now it's not sustainable. And they definitely start eating juveniles, you know. They might be in a position where there's a food source issue. Now the attention's turning, and yeah, you might be better off with really big stuff. But I, you know, what do? Break your spine, twerking the frickin' 2-pounder. Jay, when's the last time you throw a 2-pounder?
Gee, Steve, I can't remember ever throwing one, but there's plenty of heavy baits out there. There's some more coming in, too. We got some stuff coming.
Gotcha. Sean says, did you ever get the pleasure of fishing with Bob Bruner? He was well-known around St. Clair area. I fished with him. If I remember right, he was somewhere around 91 years old, still throwing baits when I went with him. Anyway, he made these bucktails with heavier blades for more turbulence in the water. Do you think something like that makes a difference? What's your thoughts? Happy holidays, y'all.
The Brunner Runner. Yeah. I met him several times. Yeah. He used to come in all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jay stole the change out of his console while he's in the store one time.
Robbed him when he was in shopping.
He went straight out there to his Oldsmobile 88 and took all the change out of the center console.
Yeah,
got him. that's just
bingo.
Take that. No, heavier blades. I mean, anytime you change a blade, right? Bucktail blades, all this stuff. There's so much variety. Everybody focuses on blade type. They often forget about blade thickness. So there's a certain point with these blades that they actually are warping in the water at different speeds, right? Really thin blades, actually, when they're under force, it's minute, blah, 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 blah. But they're actually, you know, in motion, they're under stress, they're actually fatiguing and being, I'm not trying to overstate it. Don't think the thing's in there warping like we're going at jet speed or something, right? But there's force on these blades, and they actually have different vibrations based on thickness. Jay, what's the common? We sell, the Musky Shop sells like a basic standard thickness blade, but there's a thicker blade that is far less purchased.
04, O gauge. Yeah. 025 on most bigger 025, blades. There you standard. Go. Yeah.
But that thicker gauge, it's not because we're looking for a blade that won't warp. It's a heavier blade, but it has a different vibration. And they actually take more speed to get going. So, I think Spanky's a thick. Is a Spanky the same thickness as that? I don't know.
Spanky's run heavy blades.
Yeah, it's a heavy blade. I don't know if it's the same as the heavy blade, but it's something to consider because you have speed and lift, running depth that's going to augment through the blade chains. Like if you took like a paper thin blade, like the thinnest of thin blades, the exact same surface area versus a 04 blade, it's going to run differently. It's going to, it depends on a lot of factors, but if you were able to do that perfect one for one test, right? Everything's identical except for the blade thickness. You will see a difference in run, and it's also going to feel and sound different in the water. Right? It simply is. It's just a different vibrational profile. It's one of those things of like, how far down the rabbit hole are you on blade selection on bucktails, right? Been there, done that. I've got piles of blades, and I've played with a million different combinations, and you'll see there are certain applications where, heck, you want this, you want that. You know, in general, the easiest thing you can do is, you know, your overweighted bucktails, but I think a lot of guys, Jay, when they start playing with this stuff or they start making bucktails, they're cloning, right? One thought process that's pretty common, and you'll see people come into the store, and you know they're buying stuff to clone with, right? Like, hey, they scored on whatever this one mayhem combination, and they, you know, they're buying similar and cloning, which is fine. But
right, and they're taking notice to the spacing of the beads and the amount of weight on the ship. Yeah, okay, yeah.
That's
for sure,
and that's where everybody starts. The cool step and the next thing to do if you've done that is now take this stuff and start playing with it on the water and observing the differences that you can get out of all the different blades, you know, by themselves in combinations, and really observing that change in running depth, right? We can't really observe the vibration a way a muskie would perceive it, but you can kind of make some educated hypotheses out of what should be happening, right? Mm-hmm. One thing that's really hard to look at, and I'm going to, and where I'm wrapping her together here, is the rate of rotation of these blades, right? So if you look at a willow leaf blade or a French blade versus Indiana, Colorado, a lot of the benefit, aside from running depth, is how much vibration we're getting. It's been done a few times where you can see how many rotations are happening per foot. Right. And so if you can conceptualize, it's like a crankbait that's wobbling a heck of a lot in a short distance versus a wide fat wobble. Right. So blade thickness can influence this. It can influence how many rotations you're getting. Mm-hmm. Again, there's not a guideline where I can go, well, this blade at this thickness will give you this, but it's worth considering and playing around with different stuff. And the best way that I find that's actionable to do this instead of setting up some crazy musky bucktail lab in your guest bathroom, that's what I recommend first and foremost. Jay, are you taking notes?
Okay. Musky lab.
Right. Musky lab. You take things from your wife or girlfriend's or your boyfriend's or your wife's girlfriend's kitchen, whatever, and get these supplies set up, right? Make sure
like a spatula,
whatever. Ruin as many things of your spouse or significant others as you can, and test bucktails in the guest bathroom. Then we move on from there, which is the better way to test this stuff. Build things that are like one for one with different blade combinations or better different blade thicknesses, right? Say we're building a single blade, kind of a Booker-esque single blade bucktail, right? And then build them identical with the only difference being the blade thickness. And you'll see a change in running depth. And that's a really good way for you to get your brain around it. We go, okay, everything else is the same, but the blade thickness is the only difference. I can perceive how that's reacting to the water. If you're really observant, you can feel a different pulse coming translating to the rod. And then it becomes more actionable from there to make more sense. You know what I'm saying? Or just set up the experimentation tank. Heck, Jay, just go down to the Bass Pro Shops and just start testing them in that tank. Jay will bail you out. You know, huh? Why not? Give her a shot. What's the worst that can happen? Jail?
Just walk in there with a tackle box full of bucktails and start flipping them in there. Sure. Why not?
Why not? Don't mind me. You know, stay out of my way. I'm testing these things out. Oh, I wish you're freaking, well, I'm going through the emails here. Goodness gracious. Where is the freaking one? I'm trying to find it. Sorry. That's somebody that's getting baits right there. I have too much emails. Too many emails, Jay. Yeah. Just test those anywhere you want. Stephen J. Joseph. Awesome show. Thanks for all the knowledge that's been dropped upon the musky world. My question is about big rivers. I'm in southwest Pennsylvania, so Susquehanna is what I'm guessing. My rivers are half a mile wide, dredged, and have a little current. There are no typical deep pools besides massive channel. Dredged channel runs between 20 and 25 feet, with steep drop-offs up to shallow flats with weeds less than 100 feet wide. Dams are gated flood control jobs that average 10 miles apart. In the summer, these river fish like a series of lake. My luck changes when the water temps dip below 45. Where are these fish in cold water? When do they start moving up to set up on the big setter? Okay, he's going on to this. So what are we doing in this cold water period? Right. Should I answer this one first? Would have segued off my ramblings. Mm-hmm. So there is a definitive difference. And I mean, a definitive difference between 45 and 50. And this is something. Oh, I said Project Jay. I promise you, folks, before, if you're up north, before you wet a musky line again, up in your neighborhood, the next book will be done, Jay. We're on it here. And I actually did a little change, Drew, making it bigger and denser here. But I get emails about that. So it's going to be something. I'm going to change it up. I don't want to do a number two. I want a continuation. I got another concept here in mind. So that's coming. So to answer.
Did you finalize the title yet?
Yes, but I'll tell you later. Waiting on the cover. But it's just trying to keep up with things. And it's like I had it all done. I went, I got more to say here, but I want to do something a little bit different. So it's going to be fun. But that answers everyone that sends the emails about the next book. Promise you. I apologize. The reason I bring this up is there's a lot of people. Hey, I want to get Herbert a copy for his birthday. Hey, little Johnny wants one for Christmas. Sorry, little Johnny. This is your first lesson in disappointing Christmases. There it is. Tough. Life sucks. What do you do, Jay? How many disappointing Christmases have you had, Jay?
How many?
Yeah.
I can't think of any, Steve. They're all just wondrous.
They're all just glorious visits with the family. Anyway, but water temperature, I went down that rabbit hole because of thinking about seasonality and water temperature here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 60 to 70. Nah, there's a difference, right? There's a difference. You know, 70 to 75, there's some difference. Now, some guys will say, oh, it's everything. Talking gross generalities here, right? I don't believe that there's much more of a span, right, or a comparison when you go from 50 to 45. Like 55 to 50 is a different animal. 50 to 45 is a whole other animal. And then below 45 to that freeze up point is an entirely different animal. So the lower we get on the temperature readout, I believe that it's a tightening of tolerances with musky staging activity that is a far greater tightening than what you would see at 60 and above, right? So if you split it in the middle, because you go, okay, what temperatures are we usually confronted with? The magic number of 55 as far as that spawn temp, as far as what we're thinking springish, right? Again, gross generalities here. Above that is less truncated, less complicated. It's complicated, folks. Don't get me wrong. That's a complicated endeavor, 55 to 75 to that upper limit, right? It's a different animal. But in comparison, that 55 to freeze up is a far more complicated thing. Now, that is mainly systemic of a bunch of factors. But take in consideration, first and foremost, period. Get it through your brain. Activity levels and metabolism are based on what, Jay? Water temperature, right? They're metabolizing, you know, how much a muskie needs to eat. How much do they need to eat is based on their baseline caloric needs, okay? What does that mean? Well, what that means is, what do I need to consume for me to be able to still breathe? That's it. They're not, you know, jumping in the car. They're not going to work all day. They're not, you know, doing all this or doing all that. What do I need to eat so I am just able to lay here on the bottom and do nothing? That's bottom dollar, right? That's the end of the road there. Everything else from up that, you know, is increased. You know, how much they're moving, sometimes say like a river or whatever, a reservoir can influence it. They need to move more and their calories or caloric needs are higher, but there's a baseline. And that baseline drops for them to just simply maintain being alive. It drops to negligible in comparison to what their baseline need is in the summer, right? So baseline in water that's 55 degrees or above is way higher than baseline at that 40, 30, right? So colder water, considering that they're cold-blooded and considering that all factors are systemic of water temperature being activity level and caloric needs. All right, so the next thing to consider about that 45, that's cold water temperatures. It's the same game quite often from a stability standpoint as any time else, but the edges are shocked. So what do we know about temperature drops, Jay, in the spring and in the summer? What do drops in temperature do? And Steve Herbeck's calling. Quick warning. If you don't want to hear bad words, tune out. Steve doesn't have a filter.
In the spring, it's generally not great.
Hold on. It's Steve Herbeck. I'll be damned. Hold on.
Herbie's calling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm just you know, calling in a day pretty soon. And
hold on, let me freaking merge you. Jay.
Yeah.
We have the Christmas Grinch himself. What are you doing,
Christmas
Herbie?
Spirit, Steve Herbeck?
Shit, I'm turning into a little gnome or something. I just had was at the doctor. Got measured today and I'm 2 inches shorter than I was last year. What the fuck?
What other Christmas spirit? He's in the spirit, folks. What other Christmas complaints do we have? Keep going.
You're trying to fit me in a chimney or something.
He's lost 2 inches off his height. What about shoe size? Did you drop shoe size?
No, but I did lose 20 pounds over the summer, so I feel pretty good.
Heck yeah.
Well, anyway, what you talking about tonight?
Well,
muskies.
We're talking about muskies, but I actually was just going through my dissertation on activity level and how it's such a different animal when we're below 55 or in that 40-degree zone. Actually, I talked to you about it, Herbeck, earlier this week, so why don't you take over? This guy's fishing. Water temps below 45. What do you got?
Well, you know, actually, you know, below 50, you know, 45 to 42 is actually, of course, I'm not down south.
He's not either, but just gross generalities.
You know, so, I mean, actually, you know, 42 to 45 is a prime fall temperature for me. You know what I mean? The fish start bunching up on the edges of the structure. Of course, you know, our bait fish, you know, and the kind of lakes that I fish are, the pelagic stuff is starting to stage, you know, for spawning at night. So the fish are out off the edges close, waiting to move up at night. You know, your suckers and stuff that were down deep like walleyes were in the summer are now up, you know, back up because, you know, after 50 degrees, everything's the same. Water temperature is the same. So they can... They're more up in that 12 to 18 foot range, so your live baits you're running are more effective, you know, because the fish are looking for them at those depths rather than at 30 to 50 feet, you know. So I wouldn't think that, I mean, because I fish some lakes that don't have, that do and do very well at those water temperatures that don't have pelagic bait fish also. So I would think that your issue that you talked to me about, and we came up with some, you know, ideas for you to give it a shot. You know, I think it was just a matter of them getting used to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, you hardly ever get below 50, and, you know, you were pushing 40 to get 40 degrees in that range of 42 and stuff. And it happened pretty quick because of these damn cold snaps. So I think it's just what you were experiencing is just kind of a shutdown, you know. They kind of pucker their asshole and just lay low for a bit, and then they get used to it, and then they start feeding. And the main thing is to understand is, you know, the only times I see bites all day are when the water gets real cold, and then you have a warming trend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you're below 50 degrees. You know, you're down into that 40, 42, 45, even 30, even below 40. Then you have a warming trend, and you can have a very, just because of thermal heat, the water temperature ain't going to go up. It's cold, days are short, nights are long. Even, you know, it's, even a warming trend, we're talking, you know, 40 degrees. We're not talking sunburn weather, you know what I mean? Sweating type of weather, where it's still cold. The water temperature isn't going to rise any, but it's just the thermal heat aspect. Kind of like, you know, like the scenario you could compare it to is like you got a cold north wind after a cold front. You know, it's, you know, with the wind chill and that, you're freezing your ass off, but you pull around an island out of the wind and the sun is shining and you go, holy cow, it's like a different day. Well, the fish feel that same stuff. You know what I mean? That thermal heat, the sun going through the water, and their dark backs and stuff, they pick that up on that. And they don't all run to the lee side of structures, you know, or islands and stuff, but it's something to look at because the fish in those areas tend to be more active.
Yeah, makes total sense, absolutely.
And it seems to me that a very common depth that fish like to be at when they're experiencing a shock like you went through is, you know, from 18 to 28 feet. They seem to drop down to right at 18 and below.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good place to start looking. Not that that's the only place to be, but it's a good place to start because I've seen it kind of be a pattern, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then once 2-3 days go by, if the weather doesn't change, they kind of get used to it, and then they start going back. You know, basically, we can't wait forever. Let's move on with life, you know, and things start, you know, straightening out for you. But I think you just went through a shock that this fish ain't used to.
Oh, you know what I mean? Oh, and that's what he's referring to. I actually called Steve, and we were just talking about, you know, water temps, the same thing that you do, and you just sit here and go, all right, where are we at? What are we doing? And it's like, I think that, you know, to the point I was making earlier before you called, which is, you know, there's those breakdowns in temperatures and where we're staying. I told Jay, you know, my game plan has been, you know, that it, I was, when we were doing it earlier and you weren't here, like I said, it was like, everything's below 10. Get that out of your mind. You know what I'm saying? It's like where you're focusing your energy. And I think that's important when you're saying that below 45 zone is, you know, you're saying 18 and deeper to be considering that. Let me ask you this, just throwing it out there, because you always hear people kind of bark about target depths. Do you think there's a maximum target depth in the winter as far as like, because I'm saying from like a barotrauma level or any of that crap, or is that just out the window?
Well, it depends. They can be anywhere.
Right.
Okay, they could be at 70 feet if they want to be. They can be at 5 feet if they want to be. Water temperatures under 50 are the same. Now, what's everything else doing?
Yep.
You know, what's the food doing? Stuff like that. They can be deeper. So, I mean, I don't like to fish 30 feet. You know, I've caught some fish in the past, you know, at, you know, 30, 35 feet, and, you know, and I've, you know, experienced barotrauma once or twice. I have a tool to drop them down, but I'm not going to go fishing with the idea that I can drop them back down and I hope they'll be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, once in a while, a fish will pick up a bait, you know, at 12, 18, 12 feet, 22 feet, and run out to deep water, and real quick, and then, you know, you want to catch up to them before you set the hook, and if, you know, they can actually, you know, get too deep on you. So I always check my depth before I tell the guy to set the hook. I always check the line counter. I'm talking live bait fish. Mm-hmm. You know, I always check the line counter so I can tell the angle of the line and what, how much line is out, how deep the fish are. And if you do, you know, I've pulled fish. I've actually taken fish, put the trolling motor in very low, and kind of slowly pull them shallower, and they wouldn't let go, mm-hmm. you know, before I set the hook. But, you know, if you do set the hook in water deeper than about 25, 28 feet, then I suggest you prolong the fight. Prolong the fight, lower pressure, let them swim around, get them up and out of 5 feet. You know, let them swim around with a good bend in the rod rather than putting the big power heat on them. And mm-hmm. then just till you get up to, you know, about 20 feet or so, and then just put the heat on them and get them into the net. And that's what works really hard for me. But handing the rod off to a guy that's been waiting all day, and all of a sudden he can tell, he can, yeah. you know.
Losing his mind.
He can tell I'm excited because I know I can tell by the weight of the fish and how it's acting, that it's probably a really good fish. Well, shit, man, everything goes out the window. The guy's, you know, the guy's adrenaline level goes up 100%, and you got to kind of coach him into fighting a fish slow. You know, generally live bait fish in depths, you know, like say 22 to up to 8 feet, it's probably best to fight them pretty hard to get them in the net as fast as you can in case something's wrong with the hook set, you know, because if they got their, you know, mouth shut and the wires going through their mouth and stuff like that, you can hold fish. I've caught fish that never were hooked, but you have to keep pressure on them to do that. If you let them, you know, open their mouth and shake their head, they'll get rid of stuff that's hooked wrong, you know what I mean? So, I think, you know, normal depths, I like to fight fish, you know, pretty good. I use a big parabolic bend rod, so it absorbs a lot of the, you know, the stress on the line and everything else. You know, big, rather than a fast tip and a heavy butt, I use a parabolic bend fiberglass. And, you'd be surprised with that rod, how forgiving that rod can be. I use that 8-foot PMG St. Croix a lot, and the St. Croix trolling rods are also good. They got parabolic bend, take up a lot of the heat that the fish can put on you, and you can, you know, get them into the net without running drag and stuff like that. The rod acts almost like a drag, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. bending so much from the cork all the way down, and the guys know they got a hold of something, man, you know, with that kind of rod too. You have a good fight.
Heck yeah. It sounds like you're watching Matlock in the background.
No, well, I'm actually in the doctor's office.
Oh, are you still? I was going to say it. So I thought somebody was trying to play a techno song on a microwave.
Yeah, so I didn't want to. You called me, and I didn't want to miss it.
Dr. Bob. Calling Dr. Bob.
Well,
yeah. I'm just doing a little tune-up treatment here, and it's off season, and it's kind of like. I'm just like all my other equipment. Right now is a good time to go through stuff. No, don't mm-hmm. wait till the last minute. Mm-hmm. Go through all your gear. You know, get your reels put away that are in good shape. The ones that need to be worked on. Get them packed up and get them out. Because if you wait any longer, then they get swamped and you might not get them in time for season.
Oh,
rods that need repairs or rods you broke to replace. All your baits, go through them and change hooks and find out ones that need to be replaced because these are all chewed up and beat up. You know, it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, my body's part of my gear these days, so I got to tune it up through the winter.
You got to get rocking and rolling there. So
What do you want
for Christmas other than for Danny to stop being a bitch? that's number one on my Christmas list. What about you?
Yeah.
Sorry. Terrible. Trying to start.
He's definitely in the Bah Humbug.
Is he? I didn't even know that, but I'm just, you know, just trying to stir the proverbial pot there, if you will. So anyway, goodness, let's go here. Help us with one more for the holiday season here. Another Kevin, Jay. How many more Kevins are we going to have to answer here?
Sounds like a few.
But here we go. It's like a softball.
Is it a Gmail, Kevin?
No, it's not. It's a normal. It's actually his work email, thank goodness. So it's not okay. Like Frontier. What? Hey, Herbie.
.edu.
Herbie.
What?
Are you on frontier.net?
No.
Good.
What the hell is that?
No, don't worry about it. So he says, this guy's saying that he's starting sucker fishing this year for the first time, right? And has an open season. What rig do you recommend? That's a Steve Herbeck question I've ever heard. Lay it on this guy. How's he need to be setting suckers up, Steve-O?
Well, if it's your first time, you got to really understand the concept. And the concept that is most important to understand is that your rig needs to break free on the hook set. Okay? Don't use great big hooks buried into the side of the sucker. Don't use a nose hook through the big rubber of the nose, because you will not break that rig free unless you're using a very small wire hook for the front nose. That will work, and it works. But if you use a bigger hook and that rubber nose, that lip stuff is really, really tough. When they got their teeth, they got their mouth extreme pressure like an alligator on that sucker. Their teeth are, you know, an inch or more long on both sides, and they're buried right to the gum. You aren't gonna, and they don't, you know, the only chance you got is if you're really, really lucky and they shake their head and open their mouth to try to get rid of it, and at that instant the hook slides and you get a hook set. But that's very low percentage and chance at best. So it's best to have a rig that will break free. If you're going to use a nose hook with your quick set rig, make sure it's a fine wire, small hook that on a big, powerful hook set, will actually bend it open, so to speak. Or, you know, but I prefer breakaway rigs completely. I really like Shumway's Fuzzy Shumway's clip. I just get the clips from him, and mainly because I use a different hook than he uses. They kind of, you know, I'm not going to say copy, but the idea of bending one treble, one hook on the treble to put through the skin. I like to have my hook straight back. My pin hook goes straight back in line with the shaft of the treble. And that goes under, it goes in under the skin and back out. And the barb stops it from moving. And it and when if the hook would encounter an obstruction, say weeds or a rock, and you pull on it a little bit to free it, you're actually pulling back. You're not pulling the hook out, you know, until you really set the hook, you know. With the hook vertical or rather than horizontal, you end up tearing the skin, which, you know, it just any little more injury to the bait, you know, is not good. You want your bait to be so lively, and I know they're expensive these days, but what do you got invested in your trip, your gear, everything else, you know? When a bait isn't 100% lively, running, wants to run drag once in a while, if you're using live scope and you see a fish come up on your bait and it runs drag, you know you got a fish. And I've done it so much that I don't even need to use scope to tell if a sucker's being looked at, because I got my rod in my hand. I'm using, you know, that St. Croix rod, which for a glass rod is, it's a composite. It's very, very sensitive. I use a smaller reel, a 300 size line counter, so that the whole rig is light. I keep it in my hand. I'm keeping my bait off balance. That bait is telling me what's going on down there. I love that perception of thought process from my hand to the bait to my brain, because that's what's exciting to me. I can visualize what's going on. Now, with scope these days, you can sit and watch it going on. So I think the main thing is that he has to pay attention to is make sure that the rig will break free. Like, at the end of the day, I got a sucker right alongside the boat at the end of the day. I can just quick snap my rod tip. The bait's just in the water right in front of me, and my rig comes free. But yet, I have no problems with the chicken bait off while we're fishing, unless I would get like a super heavy snag, like a big log or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you're on your hook set. The rig will break free cleanly, with just a good hard fast hook set. You shouldn't have to set it more than twice. I usually set twice. I set once, reel down, and set again just to make sure that everything broke free. If you're fighting the fish and you get to where you can visually see it and you still see the belly of the sucker in his mouth, fucking hammer that bitch again, because it hasn't, that rig has not broke free. I'm not saying the fish.
Say it again for the people at the doctor's office. Make sure they know what's happening.
But, you know, it doesn't mean that the fish isn't hooked, but there's a very high likelihood that it isn't.
I think that was a violation of HIPAA laws.
Thing that's very, another thing that beginners do is they get so nervous, and because of the, and you know, wanting to have the bait, that most people that are beginners wait way too long before they set their hook. It's called a quick set for a reason. That means you set it as quickly as you possibly can. If the fish is moving away and you're within 30 feet, hammer the rod, hammer the hook set with the rod sideways, opposite of the way the fish is moving. You'll slide the hook into the corner of his mouth. I actually, if the fish is kind of lethargic and not running, and some of them do that, they just click, 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 go down 5 to 12 feet deeper, and then they kind of just stay there, slowly move away. And that's what a lot of big fish do. The smaller fish are the ones that tend to really scream out the clicker. I like to get straight over the top of them, straight over the top of them and just reef the hook set straight up. My hook sets are way over 90% hookups over the course of a season. Mm-hmm. And I don't use big hooks. 2 aughts are the biggest I use. Fine wire hardened hooks like the Gamagatsu owners, stuff like that, BKs, stuff like that. Those are awesome, awesome hooks. To straighten that hook for the pin under the skin and out, you need to heat it with a torch till it's red and then bend it straight. You can't just bend it with the pliers like you can with a bronze hook or it'll break. So the number 2-aught beak hook, for a conventional hook, the number 2-aught beak hook, what's the beak hook, Jay?
Aberdeen? A really light Aberdeen hook for the front one?
No. You want 2X. Anyway, but the Eagle Claw. The Eagle Claw beak hook number 2X and 1-aught.
Two times strong, yeah.
For a conventional bronze hook, those hooks are really, really good. But I tend to like the hardened round, the hook is round, it's thin, the hooks are so sharp even right out of the box. When they bury up to the bend in a 1-aught or 2-aught hook into the bone of the mouth, upper mouth, or into the side of the jaw, they don't come out. It's like locked in because the bend is so tight, It's like locked right in. So make sure you set the hook as quickly as possible. You're going to have problems with them turning the bait and trying to swallow it. You should be setting the hook within 10 to 12 seconds.
There you go. Well, that'll get you to where you need to be. That is excellent information. Herbie, if somebody, I know I ask every time on here, but everybody always asks me when they're on my boat or how in the heck they fish with you, which it's not a shameless plug, but explain to people if they want to fish with this summer, how quickly they need to get with you. Kind of what does that look like?
That's
so
crazy.
Far?
Normally, I don't even send notices out, after the first of the year because to repeat guests or mention it, on any like podcasts like this or anything, because I don't usually have any problem. I actually usually get too busy, but for this year, it's starting to book up already. So, if you're serious about getting a hold of me and doing some fishing, and you're not a repeat guest, I would get a hold of me sooner than later. That's for sure. Don't wait for the shows. This musky shows and stuff, that was always a, kind of what people did. But, book it now as soon as possible, and then we can talk about it and fine-tune the day and what you can expect and stuff when you see me. Because I'm probably not going to have a lot left by the time we get past the Chicago show. My November is full already. My October is getting full in Canada. I have very few spots left. June is filling up in Vilas. I got some scattered stuff in May for southern Wisconsin and the river, Wisconsin River. I got a few dates left in June for Vilas County. July, August in Canada, people are just booking their trips, so some of that stuff is still available. September in northern Wisconsin is, I got some time left here and there, but it's all scattered and it's filling fast. I'm getting 5-6 calls that are serious and booking right up a day here. So I would say sooner than later is better, and that's the best way to plan your trips too. Don't be planning trips last minute.
No,
you just ain't going to get what you want. You ain't going to get to where you want to go. As accommodations-wise, things are getting busy these days. So sooner than later is better. But no matter what, whenever it comes around to you, I'll do my best to find you a spot and fit you in. A lot of my people are very flexible. They don't care as long as we get to fish together. If there's, some days open that they can move to because the days they got are the only days you can do it. Usually I can make some stuff work.
Cool. Well, get with him. Other than that, Steve Herbeck's going to take us out with a Christmas song. Have it, Steve-o.
Oh, no.
Good try, Steve.
I was hoping he would just like...
Let's do a podcast at about 11:30 on New Year's Eve.
There you go.
He'll freaking dance the night away. All right. Well, from me and Jay and from Steve Herbeck, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody. And hope for a great 26 for everybody.
Break out the scope, get ready to snag. Shopping them hooks cause she's hitting the bag. Dick Stemke is scoping to town. He's got the shingles, they're making him itch. We can't tell if he's naughty or not. Dick Stemke is coming to town. He knows when you are sleeping. He'll rob your backyard blind. He loves your riding lawnmower, so watch out for goodness sakes. Oh.